Welcome to Coach Aria's podcast, Coach to Lead.
Hello, 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 everyone. I will throw things to VG, who is our lovely host slash leader today. And I'm going to read off her bio because I did not remember all these awesome, awesome things. VG is an MCC coaching MCC and a coaching evangelist and multifaceted management professional. She has 20 years of experience in consulting and human resources, a background in law, and is an accredited mediator. Like, VG, are you like 90 years old? Because honestly, all the things that you've done. her coaching specialties include executive leadership, wellness, fitting today, and life coaching, working with both individuals and teams. Presently, she serves on the board of International Coaching Federation, Chennai chapter, as president-elect. Passionate about all things sports and fitness, VG is a certified SFG kettlebell and GFM movement instructor. Okay, like I'm tired just thinking about that because I did my MBA at one point. Over to you, VG, the amazing, the wonderful, and the multifaceted. And let's all be well together. Okay, I'm going away. VG, over to you.
Thank you so much, Magda. A little embarrassing, that introduction, but I think dabbled in a lot of things. And presently, a lot of my life is spent in coaching.
Own it, VG, you're amazing.
Warm welcome to all of you here today. I'm not able to see who all are here, but good evening, good morning, good afternoon, depending on whichever part of the world you're from. The session is structured such that one part of it, for about 30 minutes or so, we will talk about wellness fundamentals, some concepts, and a little bit of, framing this whole topic. But the majority of this conversation is going to be with a wonderful panel, each of them fantastic professionals, but more so lovely human beings. And, with a deep interest in wellness, all of them. So each one I could personally consider a role model in the space of wellness. They live it, and which is why I was delighted when they accepted my invitation to be here today. So yeah, I'm really excited about not just this topic, but also about this conversation with these wonderful wellness role models. And before I jump right into a bit of the content that I want to share, a very quick round of introductions. And you can see on your screen, first up is Cindy. I'm going to do very short introductions. I don't have formal bios with me. Most of you in the coaching community would certainly know of Cindy. Not just is she one of the earliest master coaches, but she's also a mentor par excellence. Why on this panel? Apart from the many wonderful things that Cindy is, one of the earliest lessons I learned from her was, as a coach, it's so important to invest in your self-care. And over the years, as I've observed her, I've really seen her live that value. And I hope she will share a few of her secrets with us today. Thank you for being here, Cindy. Next up is my good friend, Jawad. Jawad, interestingly, is probably the only non-coach on this panel. And for those of you who know me, I love a little bit of diversity. And Jawad is actually a very accomplished lawyer with the Supreme Court. And he is also one of the, very well-known mediators in India. And not just is he a practicing mediator, he also trains other mediators. I had the good fortune of meeting Jawad in a mediator training program. And I must tell you, he would, be one of those natural coaches. He embodies so many of our coaching competencies. And I was just telling Jawad that you must seriously consider coming into the space of coaching. But why on this wellness panel? Jawad, again, is really one of those people whose age you can never guess. must tell you, and Jawad, I'm taking the liberty of sharing this with everybody. Jawad's a granddad. And he's also a karate, I think, what, fourth Dan black belt, Jawad?
Third Dan.
Third Dan, okay, almost there. Yeah, I hope you get your fourth Dan soon. So, and Jawad is, again, really a role model that, you know, age is never a bar if you want to totally live life the way you want to. Mm-hmm. More from Jawad in a while. Next up, I have, you know, another gentleman whose name begins with J. And again, a very masterful coach for those of you who know John Sarau. And apart from having a fantastic corporate career in the domains of finance and leadership, and, you know, also somebody who loves facilitation and training, John is a man of multiple, you know, interests and talents. John plays the sax. He is an avid golfer. He also loves all things fitness. How wonderful. So John, and in my conversations with John, he has told me that the little secret is that this helps him to be a better coach. And we'll hear from John on that shortly. And finally, my friend, Manikantan, who's presently in the US, again, you know, a professional coach. He is an ACC, and Mani is a technologist. He thinks technology, and you can see it in his speed of doing things, in the way he is just so precise. And Mani always goes the extra depth in a conversation. And you know, when Mani says something, it's well backed, it's well researched. And Mani is also a person who I have seen always at ease. I've rarely seen Mani stress out in my knowing him. And that's such an amazing quality to have as a coach and a professional. So Mani also loves the outdoors, mountaineering, yoga, and he was just telling me that he is more into Kriya these days. So yeah, I'm as excited to listen to all of them as you probably are. So panelists, you may just sit back and relax for a little bit, and I'll bring you back in towards the end of part one. Thank you. So let's just get started with the fundamentals. I think its fundamentals are always a good way to set the frame for any conversation. Today's topic is about being, you know, we as coaches being fit for purpose, and really about how wellness can be an edge for a coach. So what is wellness? And a few definitions here. So the WHO defines health as, you know, a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not just a state where you don't have infirmity. So it's not that, okay, I'm not ill, so I'm healthy. No, there is a lot more that goes into it. And I'm introducing the definition of health before wellness because I want us to understand the subtle distinction. If you look at wellness and you pick up, you know, a dictionary, you'll probably find this definition. How your wellness is how healthy you are, and also how well and happy you feel. So there's another dimension that's brought in. So while health refers to an output to strive for, wellness simply is about the journey and a lifestyle or a way of living one undertakes to achieve one's health goals. So therefore, wellness is, you know, a conscious and self-directed and, you know, continuously evolving process of achieving one's full potential. So to just put all this together, wellness really has three aspects to it. There is the awareness of, you know, the aspect of awareness. It all begins with awareness. And then once you're aware, it's about choices that you make. And finally, as I said earlier, it is a self-directed and a very active process. It's not a passive process. So, you know, some of us may say we are born with great genes and you know, so we're presently healthy. But wellness is about your actively making an effort to sustain or to keep it there. And I borrow this definition of wellness from the sources, National Wellness Institute, a leader in the space of wellness. And, you know, in a lot of my work, I use some of their models and construct. I also want to bring in at this stage the concept or an approach of looking at wellness, not in parts, but you know, taking a whole person approach to wellness. So again, this model, a very popular model called the Six Dimensions of Wellness, which was authored by Bill Hettler, says that wellness has these six dimensions, right? Occupational, physical, social, intellectual, spiritual, and emotional. I must also tell you, for as many wellness practitioners there are in this world, you'll find as many models. So you may find an eight-segmented model, a nine-segmented model, a four-segmented model. But what I want to leave you with is that wellness is actually pretty granular. It is multidimensional. It's not so much about what those dimensions are. And so just for a working purpose of this webinar, I will be using this model of wellness. So now, let's sort of, we are coaches, right? And I think all of us in the definition would have picked up a few things, and probably you would have found something that connected with you about coaching. And so before I came in, in the last week, I was actually trying to see, are there parallels? Is there anything that we can, it seems very similar to me as both a wellness practitioner and a wellness coach. So really about coaching and wellness. And let's spend, a few minutes on this, right? And all of us are coaches, so I'm not really getting into the definition of coaching really about the nuances of coaching. But, look at the nuances of wellness and look at it line by line, right? The first line is all about potential, yeah? The second one in wellness is, as I mentioned earlier, it's about the whole person approach. And in coaching, we know that irrespective of whatever issues or goals or topics that the client comes in with, the work of a coach and the process of coaching is really about the who of the client and who is that individual. You can't keep out the individual from the kind of topics or issues or challenges that he or she is grappling with. Similarly, as we know, coaching is a client-driven and future-focused process. So is wellness. It's self-directed and active. Wellness hinges on awareness and choice. Similarly, coaching hinges on client's awareness and then translating this awareness into action. Finally, both of them support a certain level of behavior and personal change. And one talks about sustainability and the other talks about accountability, both of which go hand in hand. So that's really to say that, at some very basic level, a wellness practitioner and a coach, are pretty much approaching this in a very similar way. Yeah. And now I'm just going to spend some time talking you through these wellness dimensions. A lot of it also culled out from my own experience of working in this space. And as I go through the dimensions and, some of the things that go into it, there are certain points that have been highlighted in red. And I want you to pay a little bit of special attention to these and really try to connect it with you as a coach and see whether, there is any connect that you pick up from there. And there is a disclaimer, all these details, the points that, are there are actually only elaborative and certainly not exhaustive. So there's something else that comes up that's not there in the list, make a note of it. I would love for you to send it back so that I can put it into my list. We'll start with the physical. That is something that most people, when you talk about wellness, are able to easily connect with because it's You know, it's embodied, it's perceptible, it's something you can touch, feel, see, and all of that, right? So we probably spend about 30 seconds on each aspect. So the two things that I want to touch upon here are understanding and appreciating your body and the signals that it gives you. And secondly, feeling good about one's own body. Yeah, these are two things that are not often spoken about when you talk about a physical dimension of wellness, but I think absolutely important. And I can't understate, you know, even in my work as a coach, I can't understate the importance of, you know, being physically fit and well in my work as a coach. I don't know about you, but, you know, when you do 3-4 calls a day, everything, right, about, you know, how strong your hip flexors are to how strong your shoulders are to how well you sit when you do your coaching calls, all of it matters. And, you know, all of it also has a back end where you're actually taking care of your body. Moving on to the next dimension, the emotional dimension. One, I think a lot of us coaches are quite familiar with, because managing our own emotions and that of our client is very important for all of us. So here again, I want to highlight three important things. Prioritizing self-care. Yes, it is an emotional aspect of wellness. And staying centered and grounded are two very important things that constitute the emotional dimension of wellness. Moving on is the occupational dimension of wellness. Often, you know, when I run sessions for people in, you know, corporate roles or, you know, a 9-to-5 kind of organizational job, this is the one that often comes up for discussion, saying that, you know, we probably not spent enough time thinking about it, so on and so forth, right? I think with coaches, while we believe and we assume that, you know, occupationally we are quite well, I have two points that I want to highlight. Again, in my work with coaches and in my interaction, the point about, you know, does your career give you, or does your occupation give you financial satisfaction, which is absolutely very important in for one's living. And do you really have a career vision? What's your larger vision as a coach? What's your vision for your coaching career? And I just want to leave it there. Moving on to the next dimension. This is the intellectual dimension, and I want to spend some time here. You know, mental activities that are stimulating and challenging. What are those activities we undertake as coaches on a regular basis? As a coach, what is your avenue for creative expression? Do we have spaces which allow us opportunities for critical thinking and problem solving? Though, you know, by the nature of our job, we are not problem solvers. But, you know, when you need to be a thought partner, or you need to create a thought-provoking partnership, a space, then what is it that you are allowing yourself to really go through? What are those thought-provoking conversations? Who are the people you debate and dialogue with? Again, this is just a point of view, but I also feel sometimes in very homogeneous communities, like a coaching community, do we debate and dialogue enough? Do we challenge each other? Do we push our mental boundaries? Do we push our own models and beliefs? Yeah, or do we tend to align as a default? Yeah, this is also something, I know it's provocative, but I really wanted to make a note of that here. The next one is social. I think, you know, this, you know, as coaches, of course, I think we have great communities we're all part of. But this again is about saying, do you feel a sense of belonging to the community one you're part of? And not necessarily your professional community, yeah? In the community in which you live, in your social, religious, in your, you know, in your friend community, yeah? Or in the environment you live in. Both one-on-one intimate relationships and also relationships with a larger community go into this dimension. And the space to seek support and commitment and to give support. I know as coaches, all of us, in fact, it's amazing in these times of COVID how we raise our hands to give support. But do we ask for enough? Who do we go to when we need a safe space? Moving on to the last and final dimension, certainly not the least, is about the spiritual dimension, which, you know, there are many definitions of spirituality. I would simply say it's a lot more than religion. Sure, religion is a source of spirituality for a lot of people, but essentially it is about having a sense of purpose in your life. Seeking meaning in life and in human existence itself. It also includes a heightened self-awareness and practicing self-reflection. I know a lot of us have come into coaching because we found an inner calling. But what do we do to sustain that calling? Or is our calling telling us something else? And finally, living in alignment with your own values, whatever that values may be. So I just wanted to, you know, leave you with this broad frame about saying how we could look at these six different, yet beautifully interconnected dimensions of wellness. And going back to the question, you know, I brought in about coaching and wellness. When I look at my work as a coach, or I look at coaching as a profession and a space, in every kind of coaching, we do address one or more dimensions of a person's wellness, don't we? So I would even cheekily say that all coaching is about wellness at a very, very basic level. So I want to leave you with, you know, when we look at dimensions, I want to leave you with a little something that you can take away, which is really based on a lot of the feedback when you talk about wellness dimensions, you know, and you know, so elaboratively. Somebody wants to get started, or somebody wants to really take a relook at their wellness. Actually get, you know, a little intimidated, saying this is too much. Where do I start? Is there like a simpler formula that we can look at? And, you know, keeping that in mind, this is something that, you know, I had put together some time back, which is about the wellness building blocks. So if you look at those colorful little blocks, right, they're joined, they're very six seemingly simple aspects, but oftentimes are taken for granted or pretty much neglected. And the meaning or what goes into it is described on the outer side, yeah, in text. Simply put, a good way to approach wellness is to take care of your food, take care of your sleep, take care of your activity, have a way to manage and recognize stress, have an approach for stress response, take care of your happiness, which is about the joyful pursuits that you undertake every day. Yeah, and not once in a while. And finally, having a sense of purpose in everything you do. Yeah, why do you make a certain kind of business decision? Why are you in a certain relationship? Why do you do what you do? What do you do in the waking hours? Does it all align to a larger purpose that drives you? Right? So this is really what I, and you know, when you break it down into six simpler blocks, and you know, you sort of look at yourself saying that, hey, can I start here? Can I see how I'm doing? It just makes the whole thing a little bit more manageable. So this is something that is one way that I would like to offer you, right? So at the heart of today's conversation, why should coaches, when you do coaching, you are in many ways dealing with the topic of wellness. Yeah, but that's with your clients. But why should coaches pay attention to their own wellness, right? And while I think by now you would have gotten a drift of where this is headed, I still want to put out one slide that I think explains it, or at least explains the case I'm making for it about why coaches should pay attention to their own wellness. Simply put, let's go back to our competencies. And I will be talking about my favorite competency of coaching mindset and also coaching presence. I know, all our coaches here on the panel, I know it's a favorite for all of them, but it's really there that, when you look at those two competencies, often when people ask, how do I show up better on those competencies? How does one master those competencies? And I think focusing on your own wellness could actually hold the key to that. And I'll tell you how. So if you look at this, coaching mindset and its embodiment, often in the form of coaching presence. And I know some of you would have seen this slide before. I had shared it in an earlier webinar on coaching mindset. Really at the center are the components of coaching mindset, which is about being client-centered, open, flexible, and curious. Yeah. And on the outer periphery is how, this mindset shows up as embodiment and what are the things that go into coaching mindset that a coach comes in with. Yeah, really at the being of a coach. And look at all what is put there, right? Whether it's about emotional intelligence, whether it is confidence, whether it is being grounded, aware, intuitive, appreciating, the system and the larger context. All of this, and that's where I go back to those dimensions of wellness. Many of those things highlighted in red, that's where they connect. A lot of them actually feed into how you show up as a coach. And in many ways form the back end of who you are as a coach and in the coaching conversation. And all of these are absolutely important aspects and dimensions of wellness. Of course, there are a whole lot many more. Like, for example, let's say the physical dimension of wellness, right? You may not find an automatic connect here, but I often find that in the kind of work that I do physically, it allows me to be more somatically present for myself and my client in the coaching conversation. And similarly, something like spirituality, it is about when you understand the larger purpose of who you are as a coach, right? And what is it that you want from life? Even the way you partner as a coach and how you look at coaching as a framework, from a very philosophical level, it aligns with who you are. And so there is absolutely no dichotomy or value conflict or any of that. So with this here, with that introduction on where these two probably go hand in hand, I'm going to be stopping the presentation here and get our panel back, because I think it's best, you know, we learn from varied experiences rather than have more theoretical stuff. Apologies if it was too much of content, but I really wanted to, you know, share a little bit of this so we have a frame to work with. Thank you. Thanks, Jawad. Thank you all. So let's, you know, I did some short introductions, right? But I'm going to request, you know, our panelists and in any order to really share with the audience a little bit of your wellness story. Introduce yourself through your wellness story. Why is it important for you? Why is it important in your life as a human being and as a professional? Okay, so should we start with Mani first?
Sure, happy to start. Thanks for setting a beautiful stage for Vijay. For me, wellness was, I always used to take it for granted because I was young before, and you know, things used to always work. My body used to work, my mind used to work, and I was reasonably intellectually challenged, and spiritually I was grounded. And emotionally, you know, I never had challenges until I got married, let's say. Just my wife is going to kill me for this. But, you know, the beauty is that when you start working with other people, whether it is in work or other office situations or at home, that's when you start looking at, oh, I could improve. So to, much like coaching, we could potentially have the models of low, medium, high, or ACCA, PCC, MCC kind of models. I always thought, oh, if I wanted to do certain things, my body was cooperating, my mind was doing well. But if I really wanted to push the accelerator, so to speak, then things used to start falling apart. And the best example for me was when I was about 2014 or so. Until then, I had done mountaineering, you know, jumping from a plane, you know, going underwater, various things that I wanted to try. I tried it. It all worked, and I was alive at the end of it. And so I was playing a simple volleyball match, and then I went up for a nice spike, and I hit it. I scored the point. When I came down, there was a small pebble at the foot where I was landing. And then my leg was, you know, it had a beautiful, nice, long stretch at my knee level, where the body is not meant to do those kind of stretches. So immediately I knew that something was, you know, giving away. My old manager used to say, when you're hitting 40, all your warranty expires. So pretty much my warranty expired on that day. So I had to figure it out, and it was a long, beautiful journey in figuring it out, what it meant in all the six dimensions you mentioned. But when you put it together, it was a beautiful thing that came together.
Thanks, Mani. And, you know, one thing I must say, all you guys on this panel, and that's gender neutral, Cindy, just give me quite a bit of complex, really. That, you know, I don't think I can guess any of your ages, actually. So certainly you're taking good care. On that note, Mani, let me, Jawad, would you want to go next?
Yeah, sure, Vijay. It was really an awesome presentation. I mean, so many facets of coaching and you know, what all goes into it was quite a revelation for me, though I have been training people in mediation myself for the past so many years. But I think now I have to seriously take up the prospect of, you know, becoming a coach myself. And maybe I will come under your tutelage for that. So, anyway, mine is, you know, to begin with, it's a bit of a sad story. I don't mean to make it too much of a sob story, but I was asthmatic virtually from my birth. Okay. And as a result of that, because in those days we didn't have these inhalers, I'm 58, so I was born in 1962. So in those days, the drugs were not so well, and a lot of home remedies were tried. And the kind of, you know, if it used to become aggravated, then I had to take some injections. I think if I recall right, it was adrenaline, and that used to have a lot of side effects. And my grandmother brought me up, and she, gave me a very sheltered existence. Like I was not allowed to take part in sports. I couldn't stay back and play games in school. So that was the kind of stuff that I went through. The real inspiration came when, what I did was when I was in law college, I joined karate classes. And the other part of my life, the romantic part of it, starts over there. And that's where I met my wife, actually, because I had just got into the karate classes and I was just a beginner. And my instructor asked me to come for a tournament, and I went there. And there, I had seen my wife before in law college, okay? So I was totally fascinated with her. And then incidentally, we hadn't spoken to each other, but then I saw her sitting there in the judges panel, and I couldn't move my hands or legs, and my opponent beat me up thoroughly. So she took pity on me, and the next day she saw me in college and said, "Oh, you were the guy who was beaten up." I said, "Well, I have survived." So, that's where the that really motivated me that I should take fitness very seriously. And from that time, I started really focusing on my health, and I started attending my karate classes regularly. Gradually, I progressed. Then when I came into the profession, at the beginning, the legal profession, as they say, the law is a very jealous mistress, they say. So there again, what happened was I lost touch with my or rather, I gave up on my commitment to fitness and had to focus on making something out of my life as a lawyer. And then what happened a few years later, two things happened in my life. One was, first, I met with an accident, something similar to what Mani was saying. I had climbed up, there was a construction in my house which was going on, and there was some water issue, and I had climbed up on the water tank to see, and I fell down from there and I fractured it, and I was bedridden for about almost 2 months or something. And a little later on, I also found out that I was diabetic. So then I realized that, look, that again, I have made a mistake in my life. I need to get back to physical and emotional and mental wellness, because physical wellness, I feel, has an impact on almost everything that you do, including your emotional wellness. So again, I got back into martial arts. And from that time, I was regularly practicing till I reached my third degree black belt level. One more important thing that happened at a later point of time, this was around 2005-06. I was a little getting fatigued, because I had by then put in about 25 years of legal practice. And I was getting a little fatigued because there was so much of negativity, and even when you win a case, you don't come out really with the satisfaction that you have done something really good. And then that was the time when this whole idea of mediation was introduced to me. It started with the Court Annexed Mediation Program. So I really put myself wholly into it. And that was a big turning point in my life, because along with the physical wellness, I also, it gave me a sort of emotional fulfillment, because when I could sit and talk to people, connect with them, and, understand their problems and empathize with them, and, help them to, by themselves to come to a resolution of their conflicts. Though it was, it could be a very depleting experience if you sit there and, with all that emotion that is being thrown, and you have to keep absorbing it. But when you finish it, and when you succeed and you come out of it, it's very, you forget the whole fatigue. It's like you go through the labor pain, you deliver a baby, and then you forget about the pain. You see the baby. So it's something like that. Okay. So it's as near an experience to that, but that is incomparable. The physical pain in a childbirth is, of course, incomparable. I don't mean to in any way belittle that, because that's something really amazing that only a woman can go through. Okay. So that was the turning point in my life. And then I came into training, and I just want to share one or two experiences here, and I'll stop there because I don't want to take too much of the other people's time. I'll just tell you what happened in two training programs that I conducted. One was the case of a lawyer who was about 77 years old. And I was talking to the trainees about communication skills, about listening and how you maintain eye contact, and you know, how you empathetically listen. And he came up and told me after the session was over, he held my hand and he told me, I wish I had met you 40 years back. So I'm married, I'm living with my wife, my children are all grown up and they have gone their own way. And till now, if you ask me how my wife sounds or how her face looks, I really don't know, because I have never looked at her. She does her work, I do my work, and we just go about. I leave for my office in the morning, she packs my lunch. I go back late in the night, she's already asleep by the time my dinner is ready, I just have my dinner and I go to sleep. But today I have learned the importance of, you know, talking to each other. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go back home and I'm going to talk to her, he said. And he said, thank you so much. He held my hands and he said, thank you. He had tears in his eyes. That was really a moving experience for me, because I felt if even at that age, if he could, you know, undergo some transformation because of what little I could share with him. I took a great pride in that, and that really made me feel good. So, you know, this training has also helped me to develop my own, you know, recognize my own emotional flashpoints and where, because I used to be a physically, you know, very violent at times, like when really provoked, I would either break something or, so all that has gone now, and I've become a, you know, sort of stabilized now. So the physical and the emotional fulfillment I find in this. I'm not a religious person. As you rightly said, religion and spirituality should not be mixed, because I don't think really religious practice as such leads to any spirituality if you don't really want to be spiritual, because you become too ritualistic. In that sense, I would say I am a spiritual person, because if I don't meditate at least for 30 minutes in a day, I feel my day is not complete.
Wow.
So at some point of time, I do try to find the time to at least sit for 30 minutes just with myself, you know, just thinking and, you know, just observing my own thoughts and various other things. So that's all I can say. Thank you.
Thanks, Jawad. So from the heart, beautiful. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
John? You want to share next?
Thank you, Vijay. And thank you, Jawad and Mani, for your sharings. If I look at myself and my own journey in terms of wellness, I have to thank my dad for that. Because growing up, he was very clear that it was about the importance about good food and exercise. So that has kind of stayed with me. And you know, I was a hyperactive kid growing up, a lot of energy. And so I put my heart and soul into all kinds of sports that I played for college, school, soccer, because at that point in time, I could only afford to play soccer, not some of the other games. But you know, as I was growing up, I kind of made it a point to do some kind of physical exercise. If I couldn't do any kind of exercise, I would go for a walk. So, you know, whether it's walking, whether it's swimming, whether it's yoga, whether it's kettlebell, whether it's going to the gym, you know, whether it's running, I've done it all. I have now come to a place in my life where I do things in a very sedate fashion. And I can think of a few things that I currently do that I think keep me in good shape. One is, of course, yoga. So yoga is something that I've been practicing. And the reason I started practicing yoga was because I used to play a lot of squash. And I was laid flat on my back on three different occasions because I stretched for a ball and my back couldn't handle it. And for me, that was really a turning point, because one of the sports that I'm completely and utterly fascinated is with golf. And golf is, in many ways, like life, right? The more you try to master it, the lousier you get at it. So, and that's what is so bewitching about this game, that you're constantly trying to improve. And so for me, taking care of my back was very important. So I turned to yoga. So yoga helped me considerably. Swimming helped me considerably. And in terms of lifestyle, I try to do something or the other every day, except for Sunday when I take a break. But every other day, I have to do some form of exercise. I know there are some people who don't care too much about exercise, but for me, the physical dimension is extremely important. Coupled with the physical dimension, you know, the emotional dimension. And for that, I have to thank my wife because she's been my soulmate and my partner. And I have, gained much from my relationship with her in terms of the emotional part. So that has really, stood me in good stead. The other thing that happened to me as I moved from a career in finance and marketing to a training, facilitation, and coaching career, I was able to get to a point in my life where my love for my work, my love for what I want to do coincided with my work. So it was a very happy place to be in, which is why the last 20 years have been truly, amazing years, because I've done, what I've really loved. That's the part that is to do with the work part. From a spiritual perspective, I've been a Christian and I go to church. So there's a lot of fellowship that we have in church, bonding. It's every Sunday we meet people, we talk to people. And for me, reading my Bible, for example, and prayer is a very important aspect of my being. So that's the spiritual dimension. And I don't mean religious, because for me, it's not about religion, it's about a relationship. So that's very important with God. Since I've been a coach, I've taken advantage of the many coaches that have been my friends to work with many different issues in my life. So I've been at a place where literally every problem that I can think of, I've been able to work it through the process of coaching. So in that sense, it's fairly balanced. So if I had to look at that little poll, Vijay, there were 14 people who said, everything's great. I would probably be the 15th one there. even at the risk of sounding arrogant, I would say that it's a good place. So I'm truly grateful for that.
Wonderful, John. I mean, feeling very inspired listening to all that. But it's also been a journey, right? And I think that's the beautiful part. And so much of gratitude that I sensed in your sharing.
Vijay, let me just add a little more, because you had also touched upon the intellectual part.
Yes.
In case you're wondering what I do for intellectual part, in the last year and a half, I started learning the Indonesian language called Bahasa. And then in the last month or so, I've started on German because my daughter has moved to Germany. So that's how I keep myself intellectually challenged. And then I, of course, play music. And that has its own sense of intellectual charm and curiosity.
Thanks, John. Thank you. Cindy.
Such lovely stories. I feel like I want to go on listening. So, I think in my, as I journeyed through life or went through life, there were many pieces or events or situations that happened along the way that had to consistent growth or redevelopment or relook at wellness. So I can't really place it on one or two incidents that stands out, because right now, currently, I would say something is standing out. And a few years back, there were other pieces that stood out. So I think it was, along the way. And I think along the way, what mattered most or what had the biggest impact is what had the biggest impact when some things are not right was either listening to myself. I think that one was the most important or most showed up as a priority, is how I listened to myself. And it was also in conversations with others, especially coaches. When talking to them, you always pick up little pieces of insights or something they're going through, and it's like the learning moments is a part of you, or you journeyed a learning moment with the other person. And I would always kind of leave a conversation when it was over and think, a lot of that makes sense. And, you know, and carried on linking it to other aspects that I was managing. And I got to say, so talking about different elements of wellness, for me, I bypass the head, you know, like something goes wrong, it actually goes into the heart or the gut and just like ignores it. And the feeling of, as John was talking about, this feeling of happiness gets me into that state where I get myself into little pieces of trouble, as I would call it, because I like something so much, I'll go on doing it and not notice that it's having a negative impact or that I'm being stressed about it. Because I love it. And I think, oh, if you love something, you just go on doing it and enjoying it. But you know that cliche saying that love is blind sometimes and you don't notice certain pieces? And that's when I use my intellect to kind of reason things out and figure it out for myself and get myself into that grounded space again. But normally, I just leave that aside and go straight to other parts of me. I think I'll leave it there for now.
Beautiful, Cindy. Such a different way of looking at life itself, I think. And I can vouch for it that you know, in all my experiences with you, it's always been like that. So beautiful. And I'll come back to that, Cindy. But you know, maybe I'll start with you again, Cindy. My next question is, okay, this is for you as a person, a human being, right? And I know all of you here are so passionate about your craft. I can't separate you from that. But still, you know, for the sake of, you know, the learning point in this discussion, right? How does incorporating wellness into your life enable you to be better at your craft as a professional, whether it's a coach, whether it's a mediator, whether it's a facilitator, whatever, you know, your the way you professionally look at yourself? How does it add up?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was thinking a lot about that earlier on while you were talking or presenting. I think it's in that, for me, it's in that quiet moment. It's like when I'm mentoring, and I find that in my own quiet moments, even if it's in between that conversation, a moment of silence, and I also figure out what's going on for me and, you know, would ask a question or suggestion or something to the other person. But it's also, I figure out what's going on for me and begin to really pay attention to those quiet moments. And I love it when those little insights pop up, especially if it's somebody else's learning, because then I figured something out or an added part that makes me better at what I do, right? You know, so I kind of sharpen the saw, as you call it, by listening to others and taking in their learnings and or a moment when they interpret, for example, a core competency or a marker in a particular way that I've never heard before. And I go, oh, this is wonderful. It's like, you know, some uniqueness showing up here in a language or a culture style. So it's in those quiet moments that I begin to see more or an expanded way of my own craft. Yeah, I think there's a bit more here, but right now my mind is not playing the game.
But that's so wonderful, right? You're able to recognize that and sort of not go beyond and say that this is where I am. And yeah. That is an exceptional level of understanding your own self, your own body. Thanks, Cindy. Mani, how does it fit into your professional life?
Wow, where do we start? I think I'll give a simple analogy. All of us have, let's say we drive a car, for lack of a better thing, I would pick a Maruti or, you know, Ambassador, whatever you want to pick. typically we use it for going to office and coming back. And that's primarily what we use our body, our mind, our you know, spirituality, whatever we want to do. I talked about multiple levels. Suppose tomorrow you decide that, I want to quit office. I want to do something else, right? Or I want to climb an Everest. I want to do something else. You feel that suddenly your body, your mind, your spirit, everything is not equipped for doing that. So it is tied to the last slide you presented in terms of how to put it all together. The fitness is a key element when you try to do your purpose or try to do your craft. I was an engineer. I was a business guy in technology. One day I decided I wanted to be a coach. I find that, boom, I don't have presence. I don't have empathy. You know, you go, the long list goes. But yet I did have all of them because I had a coach who helped me to do certain things. For example, I was in a high paid job in the Valley. I wanted to come back and work in India in rural villages. So for me, that kind of a transformation, if you want to do, you needed to re-equip yourself. Otherwise, you are going to get, I think Javed mentioned, you might get stressed and you might start breaking things. And karate is a beautiful place to break things. Or you might, as John might saying, you would swing a ball which is sitting idle. It may not go towards a hole. It'll go towards a bunker, right? So how do we do it? When we are trying to change our craft, change our purpose, change our way of looking, and Corona and COVID is a beautiful way of looking at it, suddenly we find all our anchors are all taken away in this last 3 months. I'm surprised and glad, in fact, pleasantly surprised that our poll shows that people are all emotionally stable and in the higher quadrant, so to speak. For me, that was the thing. I wanted to push the limits of being a human. I just didn't want to just survive, exist, and die. I wanted to say, okay, what else is there? How do I push certain pieces of me? And how do I take this Tata car and run it in a race, in a Formula One race? So if you start doing things like that, that's where you needed to do certain other pieces. For me, it came through Kriya because I told you, right? I didn't break my ankle. I hyperextended my knee. I didn't want to go to a doctor and get it fixed. So I was I used to cross a busy road in India, and I used to be worried that any lorry might come and hit me because anytime my knee could buckle. So that was the experience I had. And I had to do something, and I could not play simple soccer with my 8-year-old at that time. And so I said, okay, then what do I do? So I looked at various things, and yoga came in, and some of the other pieces fell into place. And now I'm in a stage where I self-healed my own knee without going to a doctor. Things of that nature is possible. I'm sure Javed and other people can attest. If you do certain things in certain way, what you are plugged into, what a human system is capable of doing, is only can be realized when you push it on all the 6 dimensions or 8 dimensions of fitness that you are looking at. And your craft has to be one of that and a key element of it. For example, if you want to be a phenomenally present and coaching mindset you need to have, you need to go much deeper than the competencies. For example, for me, I joke around and say that there are sub-competencies like breath watching your, how aware are your breath? When I'm sitting right now, how straight is my back is a phenomenal impact in terms of how it plays in my system. I will leave it at that.
Yeah, I can relate to that. Sometimes, when I'm here and then over a period of time, I go like that and I'm totally sunk in, I realize something's not okay with my energy, with the other person But that comes only when, you actually know that, hey, I can actually feel these different feelings in my body, right? So great, Mani. Lovely, lovely listening to you. Javed, where are you on that? I mean, does this whole focus on wellness in your life help you to, let's say, be a better mediator? Because that's something you love so much.
I can relate to a lot of what Mani was talking about, because as he was talking, I recollected the time I went for my 2nd degree black belt test. Okay, now that was, I was about, I think, 44 at that time, and there were 5 other people who were undergoing the same test. And they were all in their early 20s or in their teens, early 20s actually, 23, 24, 25. So I was the only old man over there. Okay. And it was 3 days of grueling, really, you know, worse than a boot camp. Like we had to report at 7 o'clock in the morning, and till 7 o'clock in the evening, you had to go through a whole set of exercises. You had to do push-ups. You had to do crunches. You had to take punches on your stomach. You had to do, you have to practice the fighting techniques. And every day, on top of that, there was one guy who tried to do one flip, and he hit my thigh. And the pain was excruciating. And every day, I will drag myself back home. And I told my wife that I said, Anu, just be ready. Anytime you get a call or something, be ready to rush and take me to the hospital in case I get a heart attack or something. So that was the kind of, and every day, the next morning, every muscle, every bone in my body would be paining, but I would still, you know, drag myself back there. And when I would go there, the young guys over there would tell me, I don't know whether all of you know Tamil, you know, but they used to tell me in Tamil, Sir, neenga varamatinga nencho, neengale vantingala, sir. They used to say that we didn't expect you to come back, but you yourself have come. And we feel ashamed that, you know, we wanted to actually give up. So looking at you, you are our inspiration. No, but why I'm trying to tell you this is because the endurance that was built up. Okay. Today, you know, that was a time when my body was broken and remade. That's what I felt like, because it was broken completely and it was remade again. And I reached the stage where today, even if supposing, let's say that 1 month I don't do any physical exercise, it takes me just about 3 or 4 days to get back into shape. I can do all the stretches. I can stretch both my legs and sit down. I can do all my kicks. Anything I can do within 3 or 4 days, I get back into shape. Okay, so that kind of endurance, basically it's a mental thing. More than physical, it's mentally you develop that endurance. And that I find very useful in mediation, particularly when sometimes in matrimonial mediations, the emotions are so high and so intense that, you know, it taxes every ounce of your energy to sit there, to listen, to listen and keep on listening, you know, and keep showing that empathy and, you know, getting them to, you know, come up with their deepest fear, concerns. So that kind of the mental endurance that I developed, I think in that class, that session, the 3-day session, has stood me throughout. Okay, today at the age of 58, I can still, you know, I'm still, in fact, my nephew threw a fitness challenge on Facebook. So he did just a set of about 10, 20 push-ups or something. And he said he challenged me. And I sent a video of me doing, a set of warming up exercises, lunging kicks, you know, sit down, get up and kick and sit down. So those 20 kicks and then 25 push-ups and 20 push-ups. And then, I don't know what that is called. You just roll it out in front of you and balance and come back. So that I did 20. So he said that, no, I can't match up to you. So if I sound immodest here or trying to show off, it's not that. But since we are talking about wellness, I thought it's important to, you know, talk about this. So I really feel that, you know, physical, mental and emotional wellness is very important. I'm very lucky. I don't know about money. He said something about marriage and the equilibrium getting disturbed. But my wife has been a very stabilizing influence in my life. And she was the biggest motivation from the time I feel I started living only after I met her. Like till then, I was just floating around, like the flotsam and jetsam you used to find in the sea. But she really motivated me. And the very fact that she could fall in love with me was something which was so, I couldn't believe it, you know. So I'm still trying to come to terms with it. I always keep asking her, how do you still stick on to me and continue with me? So that emotional wellness is physical wellness leads to that. And one thing I think which is very important for everybody to develop is a sense of gratitude. Because they say gratitude is the best attitude, and your attitude determines your altitude. So I think that the sense of gratitude for whatever you get in life, these are all blessings. I'm not a religious person, but still I believe that, you know, John will agree with me there if I say that these are all blessings from some unseen force, which really gives us that resilience to, you know, go through these things in life and to come up. And yes, mediation has definitely, you know, brought about a huge change in my life.
Thanks, Jawad.
Vijay, if I may just set the record straight.
I know, he's talked about your wife, yeah.
No, now it's personal. We've been married for 25 years and last week only our 25th anniversary completed. My point is simply this. I think when we first were thrown into an arranged marriage, you didn't know how to cope with it, how to deal with another person. So then you had to gain the emotional balance is what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Beautiful. I know what a lovely couple you all are.
No, looking at your money, no, anybody will say you're happily married. So there's no doubt about that at all.
He's happy in general, Jawad. So that also. Okay, over to you, John.
Cindy, did somebody say something? I just heard some.
Well, you can go.
Okay.
Ask. I wanted to.
Yeah, Cindy, do you say something?
Yeah, I wanted to ask Vijay, because she's not sharing, and I know how, you know, she and I had many conversations recently around wellness and the different impacts it's having right now. So Vijay, we'd love to also hear from you after John shares. Yeah.
So, you know, in my role, you know, primarily as a facilitator and trainer, I'm sometimes on my feet for 8 hours a day for 5 days straight. And I can, you know, well attest to how important physical and emotional and mental fitness plays a role. If I was not in shape, I just would not have been able to do the work that I love. So in many ways, it enables me to do the work that I love.
That's seems like such a simple math, John. Great. So I'm going to just, you know, I know we're having an eye on the clock. I want to quickly talk about, you know, one dimension that challenges you a little bit. You don't have to go into the details. That is work in progress. I know everything is work in progress, but more work in progress. And if you could also just share with our audience, you know, one wellness, your top wellness hack that always works, your go-to, something that you haven't spoken about so far. Would you want to start, Cindy?
Okay. I'll do my go-to one first. Especially when there's a lot going on in my head, and that is the challenge at the same time. I'm currently busy with my PhD, so you could imagine there's always too much going on in my head, and I don't like that space where it feels heavy. So my go-to thing is just to listen to music as loud as I can and close the door and pretend like nobody's watching when I sing on top of my voice with the song. You know, a lot of times I'm a rock star. So as you can imagine, and I think that kind of listening to music, whether it's soft or loud, it just immediately gives you a different energy. It changes it, you know, there's something different that happens. And there are many times, like, you know, 20 minutes later, I have to remind myself, what was I doing last that had me stressed out? Because, you know, I forget. So my go-to thing is just listening to music. Well, besides taking a quiet moment and figuring things out or just blanking out. One of my favorites is I'd love to sit down and watch some TV and or watch a nice movie. So I call that my chilling out time. But it's so strange. Half of the time I sit with the remote in my hand, the screen is blank, I forget to switch on the TV, and I feel so content. Those are my go-to things.
That's wonderful, Cindy. And just so much in the moment, right? That you just allow yourself to go with that flow. Thank you, Cindy. John, you want to share your challenge and if there's any, and a hack?
Yeah. So as far as the hack is concerned, one of the yoga exercises that I do is Surya Namaskar. And I find that anytime I don't have time, if I'm in a hotel room, for example, I can just go down. I just need 6 feet of space, and I can do that. And the interesting thing about this specific exercise is, because it works on about 95% of all muscles of your body, it actually gives you a good workout in a very short period of time. And I also found it as a good way for understanding how your body is functioning. If you have any problems in your body, it's hard to do that exercise well. So it kind of is also a diagnostic tool of sorts. Yeah. So I find that as a great go-to place to exercise. So if I have no way to walk or golf or any other things, I just do a Surya Namaskar.
Yeah.
In terms of challenges, no, not really. Whenever I need to find some time to kind of quieten myself, I just find myself sitting in the Vajrasana pose, which is the Japanese tea ceremony pose. And just focusing on my breath kind of helps to calm down. I do that morning when I get up. I do that before I go to sleep at night. It's also a way for me to express my gratitude, what Jawad was talking about. I go to bed. So that's what I do.
Yeah. Thanks, John. That's. I think it's important to have these... these telltale ones, right, that can give you a sense as to what's going on, and something for you to pick up on. Very, very nice. Mani, what about yours?
Well,
I'm also going to request you to, I know, knowing you personally, you invest a lot in spirituality. I want you to share a little bit about that as well.
Sure, happy to do. So let me put it in context. I think my biggest challenge is I ignore the physical fitness. Because I snack a little bit, and then I used to run 10Ks and half marathons. Now I've shut all of them down. It's not anything about physical. Now it's all about spiritual. So I'm ignoring a lot of that. And that shows in my stomach. And that's where it is.
We can't see that on camera.
I confess, I have a small paunch. So let me put it that way. Let me tell you where the spirituality element comes in. My dad lived about 85. My mom is still alive, 88. And so I'm guessing I'm somewhere divided by two. Maybe I have a grand uncle who just completed 100 years this year. So, and to me, I'm like, okay, I'm here till 90. Now, how do I plan for it? That is my goal, right? It's given. I can choose to live it in a healthy way, or I can choose to live with going to the doctors and hospitals and whatever. So I've chosen. I think you beautifully put it in terms of choice is a key element in wellness. And given that the genes are telling me that I will be here till 90, if tomorrow I pass away, no big deal. That's not an issue. If let's say I have to live till 90, I better be equipped for that is what I'm trying to get at. So given that that is a potential reality, how do I prepare for myself? And that's where the spiritual element comes in. We have only two ways to work at it. I think we can be emotionally stable, physically fit, and all those elements are nice to have. In my view, if you're not grounded in your plugged into your energy source, right? Our energy source is what I call is the spiritual. So what I mean by that is we are spirit living in a human body. So we can choose to push our body any direction, any shape you want. And that is a living experience for me, not a theoretical, conceptual thing. So that plays in our back, in our spinal cord and various elements of it. I think I wish Ram was here. He can elaborate much more beautifully than I do. But the point which I'm trying to get at is that given that we are going to live, what is my hack and how do I get there? And there's a simple example I want to give it to you, which is the number of breaths that you take is called breaths per minute. And typically the faster you take, apparently the less you live. So I always monitor my number of breaths per minute. So human beings somewhere between 12 to 15, and a tortoise which lives about 120 years breathes much slower, and a dog which pants much, which has a much shorter lifespan, pants much higher, right? So this is true across all organisms. So if you just, if you're a calm, if you're sitting in a quiet place and if you watch breaths per minute, if it is anywhere between 12 to 15, there is a certain lifespan. I am currently under 10 or maybe closer to 9 is where I'm trying to shoot for. And this is not a goal. This is a quick hack for me to figure out, okay, how is my health?
Yeah. Very cool, Mani. Yeah, I think I'm going to try that out. Thanks, Mani. I know there's a lot more hacks you have, but probably we'll save it for another day, another conversation. Jawad, do you want to talk about your hacks?
Okay, I think I'm just trying to figure out how I can get into that esoteric level that Mani was talking about. I'm still somewhere.
Mani could probably coach you on that.
Yeah, I think I should. I need some coaching from Mani. For me, it's very simple. It's more or less like, oh, sorry, Mani, you were saying something.
No, just the karate. You whatever you exercise, you are, that will take you there.
Okay. I do what Cindy was saying, you know, that listen to music. The only difference is my favorite singers are Mohammed Rafi and Kishore Kumar. So I always imagine that I'm standing on the stage and I'm belting out those beautiful songs and women are going gaga over my voice and all that. I'm a very bad singer. I'm a hopeless singer, but at least in my imagination, you know, I keep thinking, and that really elevates my mood. So every time I'm feeling down, I just plug in the headphones and listen to some of those really beautiful classics of yesteryears. And that elevates my mood. Or sometimes, as Cindy said, I just keep surfing channels and my mind goes blank. I don't know what's happening on the screen, but I just keep watching the screen mindlessly, you know. So that kind of, that is when I'm very upset about something, which just to get back into focus, that's it.
Sometimes it's beautiful how these simple ones are such game changers, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful. And I think going back to our model, in its simplicity lies the power, right? It's just got to be so simple. You should be able to count it on your fingers and, you know, explain it to a child. I think that's the way I view wellness. So Cindy was asking, you know, for me to share a little bit. I honestly was not prepared for this. It wasn't prepared to come to listen to all your experiences. But I probably just share a little bit about how I approach this whole thing. So I think for me, it's been a long sort of journey. So like John, I used to be absolutely passionate about all things sports and adventure, activity, all of that growing up. And I think there was this period of close to maybe a decade where, you know, like Mani was saying, I think like Jawad was also saying that you were busy with other things. You were establishing yourself, the corporate life and everything. And then you believe that, yeah, you feel great, right? I mean, no telltale signs of anything, no grays even, you know, to tell you that, you know, life is sort of catching up with you. I think then somewhere along the way, you know, some personal experiences, you know, with a deep personal loss, it struck me that, you know, there is only one life, and whatever you do, you can't rewind the clock, no way. And I think somewhere in your mid 30s, when that hits you, it just jolts you a little bit. And then I think I started being very mindful about how do I really want to live life? What do I want to do? For how much longer am I going to? So for example, you know, I had a long list of things I wanted to learn, right? I mean, and karate was one of them, Jawad, then. Vicariously, I achieved it through my kids, who you know are also double black belts. But I never got started. So there was a long list. And somewhere I said, you know, it's all going into lists. And I'm not doing anything about it. I wanted to lift weights. And, you know, that was something that I did when I was 19 in law school. Had an accident and I never went back to weights. I had the fear of it in my, you know, I broke my nose. I never went back. So the list was just growing, you know, do this, do that. And I said, you know, on the one hand, time will not stop. On the other hand, the list is growing. So about time one starts doing. So I think the first thing I sort of rewired was, you know, my activity and physical fitness. And I realized it was such a soulful, beautiful place for me. And all of you have spoken about it in one way or the other. And I'm just such a happy person when I train. Happier when I play sport, though I don't get to do too much of it. So I still try. I know when I play with my kids or, you know, others half my age, they just beat me hollow. But like Cindy was saying and Jawad was saying, I still think I'm a very cool basketball player, right? So so when my almost 6 foot son says, you know, he will, you know, smile at me indulgently, I'll be like, no, you don't know me. And then you realize you're just not the same, but it's okay. You can still enjoy a game. You can still do whatever life permits you to do, right? So I think the last few years, one of my personal missions is to just spread that joy and just spread that thing saying that live it up now, right? You can't. So when clients come to me saying that, you know, after retirement, I want to practice yoga. I want to do this. I want to do that. I'm like, hold, right? What if that day doesn't come? What about today? And so, yeah, so, you know, I mean, as a wellness mentor, I just try just doing that one thing, saying that, can you totally live your life today and do things that make you happy? So physical activity makes me very happy. I've also become a lot more reflective. And I think my coaching journey played a huge part in it about really figuring out who am I? I know it sounds very existential, but I realized the more I go deeper, the less I know of myself. And that's a little scary actually, right?
That's good.
I was like, who am I, you know? And it keeps changing, right? Though not so much the values, but the dimensions that I manifest, the interests that I develop. But then that's how it is. You keep peeling the onion, you can keep peeling it. And so I've become more mindful. I've also embraced minimalism a lot. And the way I look at minimalism, and that's helped me a lot with anchoring myself, is not so much that you don't need things, but you really know what you need and how little you can get away with. And I think, you know, this 3 months has really reinforced that, saying that how little you can get away with. You know, I just use the same 4 or 5 set of clothes for the last 4 months that is going to sort of tear at the edges. But the point is, you don't need 200 outfits. and you know, that's true. So, and I also build that at my approach to food, because I know it sounds a little strange, but over the years, the amount I need to actually consume, you know, and I'm not talking about, you know, temptation or eating to feel good or emotional eating or any of that, right? Just to survive is actually very little. And it took me a long time to figure that out. So I think in everything, relationships, you don't need many, but, you know, what you need is what really matters. So I think I've really started embracing minimalism a lot, and combined with gratitude. And when I mean gratitude, I know Jawad spoke about that. The biggest thing about gratitude for me is I'm just very grateful that I am healthy as I am today. Something I used to take for granted. So every day when I wake up, okay, can I move my joints? Can I smile? Can I have an active mind? And I think that's all that I need. Everything else is secondary. So basically trying to say that I think it's just been, you know, a pretty overall kind of shift and approach for me as an individual. And I think it shows up as a professional as well. So sorry if I rambled a little bit. I was not prepared for this, but I just wanted to share. Yeah.
Now you're ready to play at full potential.
Yeah, and that, yeah, and play. So on that note, any last words, everyone, before we sign off? Well, I know we are 2 minutes past time. And if you can
My invitation is play at your full potential. That's all.
Thank you, Mani.
Thank you, everyone. It was lovely being with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Beautiful.
Thank you, Vijay, for the opportunity of meeting such wonderful people. I mean, it was really a great experience. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Vijay. Thanks.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. You can listen and subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. We launch new episodes weekly. To learn more about coaching, leadership, and self-development, visit us at cocharya.com. That's C-O-A-C-H-A-R-Y-A.com. See you next time.